verdad.
Hi, I'm Erica, I'm an alcoholic. A little nervous. Don't like microphones in my face, but I'm grateful to be asked, and it's an honor to be asked to speak here tonight. Rebecca, I don't know if she's in here or not. Hey, I look right over you. Sorry. Thank you for asking me. I feel like it is an honor and a privilege. Not that I didn't have thoughts that I didn't want to do it, though. My sobriety date is March 5th, 2005. My home group is Flint River Group in Oglethorpe, Georgia. A lot of my members are sitting here in the front row, so that's a good thing. As I sat up here and looked around and received texts before I came here, I become overwhelmed with the fellowship and the friendships that I have in here. And life today is so good compared to where I came from and where we came from. I mean, to have real friends and faces, you know. I don't see a lot of these people every day, but we talk here and there, but there's always that bond that no matter what, if I need something, they're here for me. And y'all are teaching me how to do that for them too. I've just been feeling a lot of gratitude lately that life is so good today. It's so good, and God is good. And I think everything works out like it's supposed to, and God has a hand in everything. My mom and dad had said they were coming tonight, and my work week this week has been extremely busy, and actually this whole month has been pretty busy for me, and I haven't had a lot of time to worry or think about what I was going to say, blah, 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 and be nervous, so that was a blessing. And so I was having this little conversation in my head while I was working today about how I was going to talk about my dad and all this stuff. And he calls and said they weren't coming. And I was fine with that. And I thought, how nice it is to have a second family. You know, and even if I didn't have a family, I knew this would be my family because you guys are my family. And it was okay because I knew that the people that were supposed to be here would be here and that it wasn't meant to be for my parents to be here tonight. And I also feel like God sometimes is like, nice show you were putting on up there, but, you know, that's not happening tonight. I do believe he has a sense of humor. And so anyway, I'm supposed to tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And if you haven't gathered already, it's wonderful now. What it was like, a little bit about me. I'm the youngest of three children. I come from a very, very loving, supportive, hardworking, caring, kind, generous family. My brother and sister both graduated college, big universities. I always felt like I was on the outside looking in, and I hear that a lot here. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. From early childhood, I felt that way. And I know that now to be alcoholism. And I'm starting to have these awakenings that say it's really not about the drinking, it's about the thinking. That's just starting to come to me. And I just think we learn what we need to learn when we're ready. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. But so anyway, I always felt like I was on the outside looking in, and couldn't have asked for anything more in a family. And still today, and all through before I got sober, my parents and my family never gave up on me. And I just can't imagine the pain and agony that I put them through. I just can't imagine. So who knows, maybe they didn't want to be here tonight, they're just not ready for it, I don't know. My sister and my mom gave me my 10-year chip at my home group, and it was pretty emotional. And I just felt so grateful that I have a way to deal with all that baggage and all that wreckage. And, you know, my family doesn't go to Al-Anon, so I don't really know where they're at with it. You know, I just knew that they had a lot of pain still that they were getting out when they were giving me their chip, my chip. And I'm very grateful to be getting the help I need here and finding what I need. Okay, so basically, before I started drinking, I just had a really hard time as a child. Like I say, I was the youngest. I was very, very spoiled. I was a little brat, and through high school, I became a very angry person. I was angry even as a child, and I never really knew where that anger came from. And even today, I've come to believe that some of it is just in me. It's not necessarily stem from any one particular thing. It could just be. And that's just for me. And had a really hard time in school. Always getting in trouble. Started drinking, and well, I remember my first drink. I've heard in here, I don't think that's necessarily true, but I do remember my first drink and my last. I had a beer with a friend. Her mom worked, and I had a horse when I was growing up. That's an interesting thing too, but I had a horse. So anyway, we had a beer at this girl's house, and I went home and went to pour the horse feed in the bucket, and I missed the bucket. And I remember thinking that that was a good feeling. Like, I liked it. You know, I missed the bucket. I thought that was cool. Maybe I'm an alcoholic. So anyway, I guess I had a little buzz. But then I shortly thereafter, I remember being invited over to a girl's house, and there were several girls drinking, and I was not drinking like them. We drank Mad Dog, and I was like in the Lazy Boy vomiting all over the place and never got invited back. just a lot of bad, poor decisions, and no self-worth even, and just always looking for something to make me feel better. And even though it didn't work, it felt better than what it was like without the alcohol. My story includes a lot of drugs. I'm not going to go into it deeply, but I will say it included a lot of meth for a very long time. I did a lot of meth and alcohol. And I don't want to get kicked out of Alcoholics Anonymous for saying this, but I can remember being very paranoid and pouring out like a fifth of rum because I thought somebody put poison in it. I've often thought, I wonder if that disqualifies me for here. I'm very grateful that I fit. I sympathize when I see people that come in that have, they think that the alcohol, they have drugs only. And I worry for them, and I sympathize with that. And I'm very grateful that I was the one at the bar that was wanting more alcohol. There's no alcohol in this. You know, put more in it. Couldn't get enough, and they would just put it in there just to shut me up. So basically, that's how my high school years didn't go very well. Early on, before even the drinking started, like I say, my decisions weren't good. I remember with my first boyfriend, I was a cheerleader, and I would have my mom write me notes to sit out of the games. I mean, that just doesn't, to me, that's, I mean, what the heck, you know? Why would she do that? And then also with that same boyfriend, I cheated. This is before I ever started drinking. I cheated on him. And to me, that's just irrational decisions, you know, just acting and not thinking. And I'm so grateful that I don't behave that way most of the time today. It still happens, but it's gotten a lot better. And it's because of this program and the God that inspires this program. So high school was pretty much just all I wanted to do was party. I didn't graduate. I got a GED. I went through 12th grade twice for missing too many days. I was in my first treatment center when I was 17. I got my first DUI at 16. And I don't know, my parents somehow pulled some strings and I got out of it. And so that was, you know, it was just, there was no consequences at the time. But even for me, if there were consequences, I didn't care. It just didn't bother me because that's all I could think about and do. My whole life revolved around just stopping it, I think. Just stopping my head and just quit, you know, just stopping that feeling, that uncomfortableness. So, my sister and my brother-in-law, I think it's 22 or 23 years they've been married now, and she's just a little bit older than me, and they met in college, and they've always been very good to me. We're all very close, my whole family. I have been getting in some trouble and going through the treatment thing and all that, and they offered to let me come live with them in South Carolina, and so what did I do? I went up there and wreaked havoc on them and just made a mess of things up there, you know, and that didn't work out. Continued drinking, partying. Situations occurred, and, well, in the first treatment center, I was introduced by the grace of God to Alcoholics Anonymous. And to me, when I remember this, I think about how we just don't ever know who we're going to touch or when they're going to come back. You know, we see people come in and go out, and you just don't ever know when the seed's planted, because I was 16 then and I hated it. I mean, I've heard people say that, you know, they thought you were going to learn how to drink here and all this and that, and I just knew y'all weren't drinking. I knew I didn't want to hang out with y'all. It was not fun. It was not. So anyway, the seed was planted then. Went up there with them, and that didn't work. Got kicked out. And at the time that first treatment, when I was introduced to AA, they taught my parents, you know, that alcohol is a drug and that I don't need to drink or do drugs. And that went on for a while. And sometime after moving out of my sister's, another situation occurred, a bad incident again. And one point I had started, my parents, you know, they wanted me to go to AA and stuff since I had gone to treatment. And I met people that I liked, and I would hang out with them, and I'd gone to a couple conventions. And at one of the conventions, a woman spoke. Her name was Mona, and she was up at the podium, and she was cussing, and she was smoking. You could smoke a cigarette in the meeting at that time. She wasn't smoking one of those fake ones or whatever, but she was smoking, and she was cussing, and she was, you know, and I was like, okay, she's all right. I like her. So I went home, and I told my parents about her, and I was like, I really liked her, and I don't know if I had gotten her phone number. I guess that one of the people was like, go get her number, you know? And so anyway, I had gotten her number, and I told her about it, and then this incident occurred, and the next morning, I remember my mom saying, you know, and this is my attitude, you know, we called that lady, and we're going to send you out there, and I remember exactly what I said. I said, why don't you go out there? You need to go. And I believed that with all my heart. I believed it. I can't even put my finger on the person that I was. It's just amazing what this disease is. It's very cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's amazing. So anyway, I did go there, and this was a long-term, one-year treatment center. And they're like, it'll be good. There's horses out there, and it's a horse ranch and all this. And so I got out there, and there was like one mare, old swayback mare with a foal. And like 1,000 rabbits. And so we had to go outside and like feed these rabbits every day and take care of these rabbits and even actually like help her like breed them. We'd have to take the male to the female's cage and all this, and she'd keep track of it. And anyway, and we lived in her house, and she let us use this little car, and we would go to AA meetings out in California. And so I got a lot of AA in there, and we would say, you know, this isn't a real treatment center. We don't even do anything in here. And she would say, all right, well, we're going to do group tomorrow after breakfast. And it would be like, oh, we don't need to do that anymore. So anyway, so I got out of there, and my parents helped. They got me a place out there and thought, you know, if I could just start over somewhere else, that it would be okay. You know, that I would have a clean start and it would be okay. And I went to a couple meetings, you know, I was going to meetings, and it's like, it's just like a magnet just to hook to the wrong people, because that's what I'm looking for. And I was going to buy a bicycle. I don't know why I didn't just go buy one, but one of the girls from the meeting said, don't buy a bike. I know somebody that can get you a bike. I guess y'all know. Y'all been there, done that? So anyway, I met this nice little bike thief. Oh my God, I can't believe it. And those were about two very bad years of my life. That's when I was introduced to meth. And of course, like I say, throughout all this is always drinking and partying and pretty much anything that anybody has, you know, I would do. And except like opiates, but other than that, anything else was fair game. And our relationship was very abusive. I can remember my relationships even in high school as very volatile, I would say. And a lot of that came from me. And even the very, very passive boyfriends of mine, you know, our relationships would become volatile. And in this particular case, this person wasn't very passive, and neither was I. And it was like a bomb going off out there. And it was two very bad years of my life. And finally, somebody called that I knew out there and told my parents, you need to come out here and get her. She's going to die. And so they did. And I wanted to start over. And, of course, my dad lets me live in a house that he owns. And a little time goes by, and before you know it, I've found the magnet, you know. I've found the same people and places and all that good stuff, and everything's back the way it was. I don't really ever recall any, like, real desire to stay sober during all these times, but all these little miracles are happening, even though I don't see it. It felt like living hell, but the seeds of AA were being planted in my mind, and I'm so grateful for that. I can't imagine the people that just don't even know that there is a solution. I just can't imagine. So I don't want to get into a big long drunkalogue, but anyway, got into that house, and just again, just mayhem. It just got so bad to the point that well, a lot throughout all this, there's a lot of police involvement, like arrests for different things. This is even in early. I mean, I was going to bars when I was like 16, I guess. I had the fake ID thing. A lot of y'all know that anyway. Y'all do that too. But like fighting with the police at the bar or whatever. And I don't know how they didn't ever. Okay, I guess I would get underage drinking. But anyway, just. a lot of arrests all along the way, and they progressed throughout my drinking career, and to very serious charges, which by the grace of God, a lot of them were thrown out and went away. And I was the type that, you know, I wanted to, as soon as I got to jail, I wanted to get out, and I wanted to go to treatment. And so I would always go to treatment to get out of jail, and it just always kind of worked like that. And I never really even thought about it again, you know. It was just kind of like, okay, I'm out, you know. I didn't even think about I'm out of that one. It was just time to move on to the next thing. And yeah, it was a good wake-up, a couple years into sobriety. So anyway, in this house, a lot of, finally on probation, everything's kind of stacking up, and I can remember taking urine to the probation officer to pass the pee test. Y'all, I'm sure there's some out here that have done that too. Anyway, maybe y'all just didn't because y'all drank only. I'm just kidding. But I just lost my train of thought. Everything was getting really bad. I mean, the house that I lived in was a wreck. It was in shambles. There weren't any rooms anymore. It was just a wreck. Never clean. Wouldn't take showers. I mean, if I could get a shower in the day, you know, I felt like I had accomplished something, you know, and that really happened. It had gotten to that point. It was so bad. And it continued to progress to the point that I didn't know what was reality and what wasn't. Like I would be seeing these things that I thought were, that looked and I thought were real, that I to this day don't know if whether or not it was. So it had gotten to that point, and my parents finally put their foot down and said, okay, either you're going to get sober and get out of this house, you're going to get sober, you can move in with us and get out of this house and go on about your business. So I really don't think I had anywhere to go by this point. One of the things I remember about living in that house was I had this swing outside and I would sit in it sometimes. And I remember one morning just coming to in that swing and my dad was standing right there just looking at me. Just looking at me. And he doesn't have to look at this little girl like that anymore because of y'all. And I appreciate that. So y'all made a big difference in my family's lives. You really have. I moved in with them, and my brother's going out with his friends, and so we went out drinking, and I said, well, I can still drink. That's right. I can still drink. Like a champ. So we went to the bar, and of course I had some incidents. I got kicked out of that bar, ended up in another one doing something that, you know, in a situation that I couldn't, you know, nothing worse than other situations that I'd been in, but not a good situation. And then getting into another argument, fight with my brother's wife, and just a mess, and then leaving with somebody else and coming back the next morning to my parents' house. And they were just sitting there, and that was the night that something changed inside of me. There was something that I felt inside my soul or my heart, and it just was a surrender. I just felt a surrender that morning, and I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God I did. So I called the Warner Robins Clubhouse, found out when the meetings were, and went to a meeting. It's kind of foggy, but my sister and brother-in-law, by the grace of God, opened up their home for me. Because it's kind of stressful living with your parents, you know? And it was the most wonderful thing that could have ever happened to me. My sister, she's been like a second mother to me. She's always loved me and been there for me no matter what. And my brother's the same way. But she kept up with my sobriety date for me. She told me, you know, that's the day. Yours is March 5th. And she made sure I went to meetings. And she had these two, my nephews were in, the youngest one was in diapers when I moved in there. And they'd say, come on out, we're having family time. Come on out of your room, because I wanted to sleep. I had never worked. You know, my dad had always helped to somewhat take care of me, or whoever I was dating kind of did. I'm not going to say that. I wasn't very smart in the choices of people that I picked to take care of me, other than my dad. Maybe because I had a dad that helped out. Who knows? But I remember them calling me out and saying, we're going to have family time. And my brother-in-law is hanging pictures, and he uses like these two bar stools he stacks up on top of each other and gets up there. And the little kids are out there, and I remember I came out there and stubbed my toe, and I was in this big blanket, and they're like, and I start like crying, and they're like, just go back to your room. We can't even look at you. Just go back to your room. And that's how early sobriety is, though. I mean, that's how it was for me anyway. It was brutally painful and very, I was very tired and depressed. And had I not had that safety net there and somebody kind of guiding me, I don't know if I would have made it, you know. I'm so grateful for that. And I think that's a good thing, too, about what we do with our newcomers. But then I find myself in a place like, I mean, I'm a newcomer, but like the people that just walked in or have just a little bit of time, but then I get caught between a place of, well, I've called and they're not answering. So, I mean, and that's where the sponsor comes in that says, You can only give it to somebody that wants it. So anyway, those two little boys, I think, saved my life too. And within the first year of living there, this was a milestone for me. Well, let me say this. This was interesting too. Like I say, I had a horse when I was growing up. I always liked horses. And that we have this little thing in Perry that it's called the Mossy Creek Festival, and they raffle off horses. The FFA will raffle off a horse every 6 months. And I had long since forgotten that I even liked horses. I mean, I didn't even remember that. But I signed up for this raffle ticket at like 60 days sober, and I won that horse. And it was a miracle because I was doing just some little, my dad started a business along many, many years ago, and we all worked together as well, my family. We're very close, and we work together, and of course, he gave me a job. It wasn't really a real job at first for a while. It took a good while, and I would go down there. He let me put my horse on his land, and I would go down there and brush that horse every day after work and feed him and take care of him, and it gave me something to do, and I just look, God just puts, he just gives us what we need. He really does. And he puts the people here. I mean, I'm just amazed at the support network, the friends that I have in this fellowship. I mean, I just never thought I would be even associated with this caliber of people. I mean, just the best-hearted, wonderful people. So anyway, that horse was a big milestone for me. And then within my first year, my sister and brother-in-law, you know, I had started going through the steps with a sponsor, and you know, made my amends to them, just little amends, talking to them. And within the first year, they told me that they wanted me to be those little boys' godmother. And that gave me a lot of, I don't know if it's confidence, but it just helped to kind of build on my foundation of sobriety. It said, you know, okay, you can do this. And another thing that happened while I was there, I can remember this. I know it says in here somewhere, I don't know where. I don't read this book as much as I should. I love the big book, and I know that every time I read it, something comes out of it. But I can remember, our behavior changes when we're not doing what we're supposed to do and when we're not around the meetings and all that. So my sister had said, are you drinking? And I was like, screw her. And I get on in the car, and at that time you couldn't drink in Houston County, and I head up 41 and I say, I'm going to Macon and I'm getting drunk. And something just came over me, and I just turned the car around, and I'll just never forget that. And it's just a miracle, you know. And that was the first time in my life that I had ever had the thought, F it, I'm having a drink, and not done it. And that was a miracle. And I mean, I'm so grateful for that. Excuse me. So anyway, they allowed me to live with them for 3 years of my sobriety, and that was wonderful. And I can remember some times, you know, thinking, I got to get out of here. I got to do this. I got to have that. Da, 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 da. But what they did for me, they allowed me to save my money, and they taught me how to work. You know, I can remember my sister would pick out my outfits for work to tell me what to wear because I didn't even know what to wear. I mean, I was just a recluse. And there was somebody that reached out his hand to me when I first came in AA and said, do you want to go have breakfast? And we went and had breakfast. And he said, you know, what are your three biggest fears? And I can remember people, economic insecurity, basically I put money. And I don't remember what else, but I remember those being like, I mean, just huge, like fears, just these big, just mountains, basically. Just thinking, I could never, I mean, that, I just can't imagine taking care of myself, and I can't imagine not being afraid of people. And we hung out a lot, and we would go to the movies, and it was just a friendship. And he would talk about the big book. He was in the program. We would talk about the big book, and it just really helped me to have somebody to kind of get acclimated back into society because, like I say, I mean, I was a total recluse. I didn't go out in society. It had gotten that bad. So anyway, 3 years, I move out of their house. I'm able to purchase my own home in sobriety, something I would have never thought I would be able to do. Sold that house. and am now living in a house that my dad owns, go figure, by my parents. But this time we're able to share moments together, and I'm able to enjoy time with them, and I'm able to do things for them. And all that is because of this program. My experiences in AA have been wonderful. I look forward to learning more. I know I only know a little. And it's funny whose handkerchief this is. My sponsor's. It has a bird on it. I didn't even know that. And, you know, things have just, throughout sobriety, I can remember 1 year, I think it was like around 3 or 4 years sober, just going, oh my God, the dogwoods are beautiful. Everything, oh my God, they're beautiful. And it was just like all over. And this year for me, it's birds. I'm just starting to see the birds like, oh my God, that bird is so gorgeous. He's so blue. And it's just awakening to life. And I look at this and this bird's on here and it's like, this just, life is too good today. I just, you know, I don't deserve it, but I'm going to enjoy it. And I'll damn sure give it away if somebody else wants it. So big milestones, things that have really helped me in my recovery are one, having a sponsor, and then trusting in that sponsor and being able to share. I feel like being able to get all those things that I thought I was taking to my grave out and giving them to somebody else, really, really, I think that that's a major milestone in sobriety too. And humility. Somebody said, oh, it was the other night, she said that her sponsor told her when she was about to do her fourth step, that her sponsor said, it's not your job to take that stuff to your grave, it's mine to take it to my grave. And I thought that was a really cool way of putting it, because, you know, we're so afraid of, oh my God, don't tell, don't tell, don't tell. And I'm starting to notice that too, that all these things that I was so ashamed of or didn't want anybody to know are now becoming okay to talk about. You know, when the time is right, it's okay. And I think God needs us to be in that place to be able to help others, because, you know, when I'm holding all my stuff in, you know, you're going to hold all your stuff in too, really. You know, we'll just scratch the surface. But so anyway, I was going to meetings in Perry, and we hold our district meeting there. And we had a morning meeting there, and I would attend the morning meeting, and I don't know why, I'm just bebopping, just hanging out afterwards, and we're having a district meeting, and I stayed. And so, I don't know if it was that one or the next, but anyway, they said, you want to be the secretary, next month you'll come and she'll train you, the secretary will train you. And I showed up the next month, and that she was gone. She was like, you can have this. I've been in this too long. I'm out of here. So I figured it out. Just write everything they flip and say. Oh, my God. But that was really good for me, because I'm so grateful for that service commitment, because it wasn't too overwhelming that I had to do it every day or every week, etc. But what it also does is, you know, you meet people from all over the whole district, and even sometimes other places, and here at the assembly, you meet from all these other places. So when I didn't even realize that it was happening, but as I look back, you know, there's so many more friendly faces, you know, there's so many more people that you know and that you just hook up to. You just feel more, it's getting in the middle. And, you know, I've said this at our home group. I was like, I think we need a couch. And they're like, they don't ever listen to any of my ideas anyway. All these men. But my first home group was Byron Warehouse. And it had this little plaid couch. Whoop, whoop. And I would sit in that couch always, you know, but it was like I was able to be there, but I didn't have to be at the table, like, you know, with everybody. But this service commitment, the district service commitments have really helped me in my life, even outside of AA, in a lot of ways. You know, they helped me to be able to be around people and be comfortable in my own skin, and I'm so grateful for it. So I stuck around with that for a while, and then became GSR for a group, and then became alternate. George was our DCM for 2 years, and I learned so much just sitting in the room with him in our district meetings, watching him. Just let go and let God, not trying to run the show. And things work so much better when I do that. It's hard sometimes, very hard sometimes, because I like to hit the ground running. So many special people in my life today, and I love y'all. So George was DCM, and then Tony took over DCM, and I became alternate, and so I was like, okay, I can coast this for 2 years. This is cool. I got this. We're voting on that tomorrow, by the way. So Tony had to step down, and so it was like, well, you're moving into it. I was like, I'm going to have to do something now. Because I know, you know, Tony would tag along with George, and he got training, and I didn't get to go. Once again, I didn't get training. Just kidding. I'm sorry if I'm just talking to my family here. What the heck? Who would have thought? But anyway, I'm very grateful for that service commitment. And, you know, it's a privilege to be able to serve in any capacity here in AA. And another thing that I've noticed since, you know, DCM doesn't really require a whole lot of time. But the people that sit up here at these assemblies, I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of time, reading, effort that goes into it. And then, not to mention, they're not sitting at home on their butts. And they're like, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I could handle that. So to all of you that have ever been up here, I mean, I appreciate it. And I just can't imagine how thin your life is stretched. Thanks, Howard. How you doing? Good to see you. Howard's our Grapevine rep. Right, Howard? He has a goal, by the way, if I could make an announcement. I'm just going to use the mic to my advantage now. What the heck is going on? Oh, my God. This is crazy. He has a very good idea. I don't know. You guys might want to incorporate it, but I like it, and I hope that his goal is met. He wants to get one story from our district, from District 7B, in the Grapevine. And it doesn't necessarily have to be this year. It just needs to get in there, and he wants it by the end of this year. That's this year's goal. And I just thought that was really neat to bring up, you know, and I appreciate everybody that serves. And we have a really good, I enjoy our district meetings. They kind of go like this. Okay, it's time to have the sponsorship workshop. It's coming up. Do y'all want to have it? Because I learned that from George. Do we want to have it? And everybody's like, yeah, we want to have it. Okay. All right, who wants to form a committee? I gotta go to the bathroom. So I've learned from George, you just sit and wait. You just sit and wait. Just wait them out. Because I used to be like, I'll do it. I'll do it. I learned so much from you. Just watch him. You didn't have to put me in training. And my sponsor's wonderful. She doesn't co-sign any bull crap. I don't get to sit there and whine or anything like that. Every once in a while she'll say, but you are right about that. She's very spiritual. And George actually introduced me to her. It was at the last prepaid. It was here in 2009. And you said that would be a good sponsor for you. And I thought, that wouldn't be a good sponsor for me. And it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful, beautiful relationship, and she teaches me a lot. She, we're a wonderful fit. She has a lot of experience in life in the same places that I like in work. She brings a lot of good experience, and I really value our relationship. So anyway, I don't know, I'm a little lost. Am I running out of time yet? Maybe I'm done. another miracle that's happened for me is And I'm learning too, you know, we think, okay, well, let me get, this is what's happened for me. And it's taken, I see Jim back there. And Tim, the corrections reps. Well, Jim's the past and Tim's the current corrections rep. Like I say, I always got in a lot of trouble. Blah, blah, blah. And never thought anything about it. So, I don't know, a couple years sober, I got to thinking, well, if I don't want to work for my parents, I wonder what my record would look like. So, I went to the police department, and I had my record printed. And the pages, it just kept printing and printing and printing. And I was like, oh, my God. I said, oh, God, I thought all that stuff got thrown out. You know, and it'll say dismissed or dismissed, or, but it still looks like a big pile. I mean, you know, it's not good. It was really bad. And so what I did with that was I took it and put it in an envelope and I just hid it somewhere in the house. I couldn't look at it. So I guess I'm going to keep working with my family. Thank God for Diddy. We call him Diddy these days. I don't know why, but he's a wonderful man. Oh, my God. He's a wonderful man. So anyway, that record, I started having an interest in getting into the jails and taking meetings into the jails. And, you know, I went through the training, and then I had that record to go with the paperwork for the training. And apparently they didn't think too highly of that. They didn't really want me coming into the prisons. And so I just kind of let it go for a while, but Jim never let it go. And he said to me, we were in Jekyll, I think it was, and he said, you're going to get in that prison. And I was trying to get into Pulaski, the women's prison in Hawkinsville. And even had a meeting at one time. Tim and I went and had a meeting, and that fell through. And after our meeting, I was like, that warden's going to talk to me. I'm going up there. And I went before work one morning up there, and I was like, I'm here to see warden such and such. And they were like, do you have an appointment? And I was like, no. And they're like, she ain't going to see you without an appointment. And I was like, okay, in my mind, it's time for me to go. This is getting a little bit out of here. So anyway, I realized, you know, I was trying to take matters into my own hands, and things don't really work that well for us here. And, you know, that's what we learn here. And I'm learning that here. So anyway, I put it on the back burner and in God's hands, and I've gone into the Pulaski prison 2 Wednesdays in a row. And what I'm learning about this experience is that I'm not really taking anything in there. I'm learning. There's a lady. I don't think she's gonna care. I don't care if she does. Audrey, I do care, but Audrey, you know, she's past DCM. Audrey's been taking meetings into that prison for like 12 years. I mean, that's a long time. I've met people that have like 5 years, 6, 8, whatever, but 12 years is a long time. And another girl that is a friend of mine from our home group, when we had a couple years sober, we were like, okay, we're going to take a meeting into a treatment center. And it was more like a counseling, like a bad counseling session. I mean, seriously, it was like, oh, my God, this is more than I can handle. I would leave going, I need a meeting. I really need a meeting. But this is not like that at all. Very structured in a good way, AA-based, getting out the literature and getting into the literature and talking about AA. And the girls talking about AA. And, I feel... All this time I thought I was getting in there to take something, but really I feel like now I'm getting in there to receive something, and then hopefully I can give that away. I really don't. I think I'm about done. My experience here in AA is wonderful. If you're new and you're having a hard time or you feel like you're alone, you know, if somebody reaches out to you, reach out. You know, if they call you and you miss the call them back. If they call and you see the call, answer the phone. You know, I think about that morning after that Warner Robins meeting when he says I was just standing around in the parking lot walking in circles. I don't know. When he said, you know, do you want to go have breakfast? If I had said no, I don't know where I'd be today. Because like I say, that's the person that kind of acclimated me to society. So anyway, like I say, I'm not a big book thumper by any means, but I have read a lot of it. That's another thing I love about this program. The more honest you are, the more you're loved. Isn't that great? Oh my God, it's wonderful. Okay, so I think this is my favorite part in the big book, and I'll close with this. And thank you for allowing me to share, and thank you for loving me. Thank you for teaching me how to live one day at a time and giving me a life. One more thing I will share this with you. Today I have a boyfriend that we don't have a volatile relationship. My mom, you know, when they were giving me my chip, and then she was crying, and she was like, and him, she's got him. You know, it's so nice. I mean, she loves him. They love him. He was off work this week, and it was like, I had this big list of all these things I wanted him to do, and my dad calls, and he's like, isn't Lee off work this week? My dad's putting up this big fence, so he's got to go over there. I was like, But anyway, and he's got two beautiful boys, and two twin 10-year-old boys that are just absolutely wonderful and gorgeous. And, you know, I don't know where the relationship's going to go. And I found myself at first spending a lot of time worrying about that. And then I realized, just enjoy it. You know, just enjoy it while it's here. And these are things that I've learned from sponsorship and the close friends that I have in recovery that I trust and love. And that's just a wonderful thing. He and I are also, just to share, and you know, not to be, oh, we're doing this, and this, but life is just full today. And that's something that Audrey said. She said, they didn't tell me when they said in all my affairs I was going to have all these affairs. Daggum. She's like, I don't, you know, and that's how my life is today. It's so full. But it beats the alternative of laying on the couch waiting on somebody to come over so I can get off the flipping couch, you know? Oh my God, I'm so grateful. Life is so good today. So we started a scuba class. We're going to go on a scuba diving certification trip in June. And I'm really excited about that. You know, we get to live in this program today. We get to live and we get to share with each other. So thank you for that. In closing, I like this. 164, the last paragraph. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.